Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. On this Memorial Day, we open by honoring our men and women who gave their lives in America's armed forces, and we'll have some statistics that may surprise you about our local veterans. We'll also have highlights of President Obama's Memorial Day message to our nation. Today you can hear about the California Highway Patrol's special traffic enforcement this Memorial Day weekend. And next, we'll tell you what San Diego's members of Congress are doing to help our military members, military families, and our veterans. Then, from County News Service, we'll have an inspiring story about Shelters to Soldiers. That's a group training shelter dogs to help returning warriors with PTSD and other disabilities. May is Mental Health Month, and we'll be telling you about the signs of depression and what you can do if you or someone you know is suffering from depression. We'll also have news about a new measure moving forward in Congress to allow Veterans Administration doctors to prescribe marijuana for veterans. On the second half of our show today, we'll have some highlights and some lowlights from the Donald Trump rally in San Diego Friday, as well as what protesters had to say about this presidential candidacy. And we'll tell you about the arrests made by San Diego police, including one that may shock you. We'll also have more news on the California primary, including the latest on the polls and debates. Later on, we'll be re-airing our bookshelf interview with Kirk Kenny, the author of a new book for Padres fans, and we'll take you on the road to the Desert View Tower out in Hakumba Hot Springs, one of East County's quirkiest landmarks. Finally, from Public News Service, we'll have the latest national news headlines today, including President Obama's visit to Hiroshima, site of the first atomic bomb drop during World War II, and more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This Memorial Day weekend, we honor the men and women who have sacrificed their lives to serve our country in the U.S. Armed Forces. More than a million American soldiers have been killed in wars since our nation began, from the Revolutionary War to today. Now, whether you support or oppose the military conflicts for which these soldiers gave their lives, we can all agree to honor the memories of those who died and to fight for better care for those veterans still living and their families, as well as to make sure that we strive as a nation to seek peace whenever possible and use wisdom to only send our sons and daughters into combat when there is no other viable alternative to protect Americans here at home or our allies. Today, there are around 14 million living veterans in the U.S. from World War II through the current military conflicts. Right here in San Diego County, almost one in every 10 adults is a veteran of military service. That's well above the national number of 8%. Veterans in the region typically have served on active duty more recently than their counterparts elsewhere. The proportion of female veterans is also higher locally at 11%, compared to the state and nation at 8% each. Veterans in our region tend to be employed at a higher rate and to earn a higher income than veterans in other parts of the state. That's the good news. But 8% of them are living below the poverty rate in San Diego County, and far too many are homeless, though our region has made strides and reduced homelessness significantly among our veterans, from 2,100 back in 2009 who were living on the streets to about 1,300 homeless veterans as of January this year. But as we work to improve conditions for our living veterans, today is a day when we take time to honor those who did not come home. Memorial Day began after the Civil War, when nearly half a million lives were lost. It was first called Decoration Day by General John Logan, who ordered that the graves of Union and Confederate soldiers buried at Arlington National Cemetery be honored. During World War II, the name was changed to Memorial Day to honor all Americans who died in military service, and in 1971, it became a national holiday. Today, we'd like to play for you a 3-minute special message from President Barack Obama at the White House this Memorial Day.
Right now, there are American troops serving in harm's way and standing sentry around the world. They're veterans who've served honorably in times of war and peace, and often came home bearing the invisible and visible wounds of war. They may not speak the loudest about their patriotism. They let their actions do that. And the right time to think of these men and women and thank them for their service and sacrifice is every day of the year. Memorial Day, which we'll observe Monday, is different. It's the day we remember those who never made it home, those who never had the chance to take off the uniform and be honored as a veteran. It's the day we stop to reflect with gratitude on the sacrifice of generations who made us more prosperous and free, and to think of the loved ones they left behind. Remembering them, searing their stories and their contributions into our collective memory, that's an awesome responsibility. It's one that all of us share as citizens. As Commander-in-Chief, I have no more solemn obligation than leading our men and women in uniform, making sure they have what they need to succeed, making sure we only send them into harm's way when it's absolutely necessary. And if they make the ultimate sacrifice, if they give their very lives, we have to do more than honor their memory. We have to be there for their families. Over the years, Michelle and I have spent quiet moments with the families of the fallen, husbands and wives, mothers and fathers, sons and daughters. They've shared their pain, but also their pride in the sacrifices their loved ones made under our proud flag. It's up to the rest of us to live our lives in a way that's worthy of these sacrifices. The idea to set aside a Memorial Day each year didn't come from our government. It came from ordinary citizens who acknowledged that while we can't build monuments to every heroic act of every warrior we lost in battle, we can keep their memories alive by taking one day out of the year to decorate the places where they're buried. That's something that so many of our fellow Americans are doing this weekend. Remembering. Remembering the soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guardmen who died in our defense. Remembering those who remain missing. Remembering that they were our fellow citizens and churchgoers, classmates and children, and more often than not, the best of us. So this Memorial Weekend, I hope you'll join me in acts of remembrance. Lay a flower or plant a flag at a fallen hero's final resting place. Reach out to a Gold Star family in your community and listen to the story they have to tell. Send a care package to our troops overseas. Volunteer to make a Wounded Warrior's Day a little easier. Or hire a veteran who's ready and willing to serve at home just as they did abroad. Or just pause, take a moment, and offer a silent word of prayer or a public word of thanks. The debt we owe our fallen heroes is one we can never truly repay, but our responsibility to remember is something we can live up to every day of the year. Thanks. May God watch over our fallen heroes and their families, and may God continue to bless the United States of America.
And now we ask you all to join us in a moment of silence to honor and remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice and to work together in these divisive times to assure that the American values all of us take for granted that these soldiers fought and died for, liberty, equality, and justice for all, will never be taken away. From all of us at East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, we wish you and your families a peaceful and safe Memorial Day.
This is Meridian Broaddus with a public service announcement from the California Highway Patrol. Memorial Day weekend, one of the busiest travel weekends of the year, is the traditional start of summer in a time when more travelers, and especially families, will be on the go. When California Highway Patrol officers take to the roads over the Memorial Day weekend, they will be working to save lives through seatbelt education and enforcement. To help make motorists safe, the CHP will be conducting its annual Memorial Day maximum enforcement period throughout the state. The special enforcement period begins at 6 p.m. on Friday, May 27th, and continues through midnight on Monday, May 30th. Although the focus is seatbelt usage, the CHP will be watching just as diligently for distracted drivers and those driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol. CHP Commissioner Joe Farrell states, "Everyone inside the vehicle should be safely secured every trip, every time. Seat belts reduce serious crash-related injuries and death. It takes only seconds to buckle up, and those seconds could literally save your life. Furthermore, California law requires that all children under the age of 8 to be properly secured in a child safety seat. 31 people died in collisions during Memorial Day weekend last year. Two-thirds of those killed in the CHP's jurisdiction were not wearing seat belts. More than 1,200 people were arrested for driving under the influence in CHP jurisdiction during the Memorial Day enforcement period. California will also join the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, its nationwide Click It or Ticket campaign, May 23rd to June 5th. Last year, almost 50% of occupants in fatal collisions nationwide were not wearing seatbelts. CHP Commissioner Farrell concludes, "So many of the deaths and injuries that occur on the highway are completely preventable. Our job is to make the motoring public aware of the risks and encourage them to be especially cautious this holiday weekend."
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. Today, we thought it would be an appropriate time to talk about our military members, their families, and our veterans, and what some of our local members of Congress are doing to try to help them and impact our men and women in uniform. This week, an organization called Blue Star Families came out with a report on challenges facing military spouses. That report found that 43% of military spouses are not working, and another 35 to 40% are underemployed compared to their level of education. This predominantly affects women, since about 90% or more of military spouses are military wives, over 500,000 of them. That negative employment situation is costing society as much as $1 billion, Blue Star Families estimates. Congresswoman Susan Davis, a Democrat representing San Diego and parts of East County, says the Blue Star Family shows why we need an economy that leaves no one behind. As a member of the House Armed Services Committee, she has fought for legislation to help military families and veterans, including authoring or co-authoring legislation to make it easier for veterans to buy homes, get a college education, help homeless veterans, study the impacts of long deployments on children, and train dogs to help vets suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. Most recently, Congresswoman Davis's law allowing women military pilots to be included at Arlington National Cemetery was signed into law by President Barack Obama this month. During World War II, a select group of young military women were trained to become pilots, the first military pilots in history. Over 1,100 women volunteered for that position. Congresswoman Davis co-authored legislation to honor them with the Congressional Gold Medal, and now with her new bill, assure that these women Air Force Service Pilots, or WASPs, share a place of honor alongside male veterans in Arlington. Congressman Juan Vargas, a Democrat whose district includes the southern portion of San Diego County, introduced H.R. 4753, the Wounded Warrior Housing Reform Act of 2016, in March. It would make it easier for disabled veterans to qualify for housing assistance programs offered by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. Representative Vargas says, "The brave men and women who have served our country deserve the respect of our government and our nation. We need to remove the obstacles that stand in the way of our veterans receiving the benefits they earned, and starting by ensuring that they have a roof over their heads." Congressman Duncan D. Hunter, a Republican also on the House Armed Services Committee, whose district includes parts of East County and San Diego, is a veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. He says he has worked to reduce the backlog at VA facilities. He recently also introduced a bill that would outlaw child rape and other human rights violations on U.S. military bases worldwide. And he went to bat to prevent the Army from booting out a Green Beret sergeant who forcibly removed an Afghan police commander who confessed to abusing a young boy on a U.S. military base. Hunter has opposed the inclusion of women in combat roles in the military, and in protest, he recently introduced a bill that would mandate drafting women. He calls it irresponsible to change the way America fights its wars, adding, "It's unfortunate that a bill like this even needs to be introduced, and it's legislation that I might very well vote against should it be considered during the annual defense authorization process," adds Hunter, who says he introduced the bill to spark a conversation on the issues. Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican representing North County, as former chairman of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, convened hearings to question and examine the backlog of veterans' claims at the VA department, and he worked to improve facilities for military members and families at Camp Pendleton. Congressman Scott Peters, a San Diego Democrat, since coming to Congress, has helped pass the VA Accountability Act to improve services and care for veterans, the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention Act to improve mental health care, and the Veterans Choice Act to let veterans access care outside the VA if their local VA is not sufficient. But he adds that even with this progress, there is more work to be done for our veterans. He also wants to help military families, and his goals include ending the widow's tax, which unfairly penalizes military surviving spouses, making veterans' cost of living adjustment permanent, and allowing service-disabled veterans to receive both military retired pay and disability compensation.
You are listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Next up, we have a special report from County News Service for you about an inspiring program called Shelter to Soldier, a group training shelter dogs to help returning military veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or other disabilities.
Hey. Dogs are therapeutic. Dogs are a form of medicine. Dogs are incredibly powerful.
Hey, come.
Our veterans, our troops, they're coming home from a war zone. They're trying to adapt back to civilian life, and it's very different. And we think this is one of the answers, one of the tools in the toolbox that can help them. 3,200 dogs are euthanized every day across our nation.
Sit.
Good boy.
We've seen the list with, you know, kennel number 10. Maybe they're not even named at the time, and they're on that list. That's something that I take to heart and I want to help change and make a difference. We're rescuing dogs from local shelters. We're training them as psychiatric service dogs. Takes us about 12 to 18 months. And then we're placing them with post-9/11 combat veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and or traumatic brain injury, TBI.
I'm Ben Kilhefner. This is Tank, and I was a hospital corpsman in the United States Navy for the Marines and the Navy side. My job was to help anybody, whether they're sick, or they had, you know, been blown up in combat. The worst was in Kandahar, Afghanistan. You got people that come in pieces, you know. You got people that have been decapitated. You got a kid, you know, coming in, you know, half his body's gone. To know that when someone passes away on you, and to see the photo of their family and their daughter, you know that they're not going to be home. It's really tough that now I have a 2-year-old daughter. That's all I can think about every day.
Got a kiss.
And that's why I found ground and Shelter Soldier, because I needed something else to help drive me. And good thing I found them, because they helped me a lot.
Come on, boy. You ready to work, huh?
The first point of contact for a veteran when they reach out to Shelter to Soldier is typically an email or a phone call. And that phone call or email is a clear, definite cry for help. Ben came to our facility, his chin chattering, his hands shaking, his eyes at the ground, wasn't able to make eye contact with me. I'd later found out he hadn't been out of the house for a little while. And I chatted with Ben out front of our facility for a few minutes, and I could see it wasn't relaxing, it wasn't changing. And I grabbed Tank, the first dog I had in mind that I thought would potentially be a good match for Ben anyway. We watched before our eyes his breath slow down, his hands stop shaking, his chin stop chattering.
It was like one of those magical moments that you can't describe. It's just something that I have with him that I will have for the rest of my life.
That moment was a moment of clarity that hit my heart and my soul to say, you know, we're doing the right thing. We're on the right path. And what we're doing does help, because I just witnessed it.
Yeah.
Tank was originally found as a stray, and his future wasn't looking very bright. I think we got Tank just in time.
Good boy. Good boy.
He's goofy. He's lovable, caring. See, he heard. He's talking. He knows. He knows you're talking about him.
Good boy. Sit.
Yeah. He's always leaning against me, putting his paw on my foot, trying to establish that connection still to make sure that, you know, hey, I'm okay and everything, just like right now, you know. I saw that I was having a nightmare and stuff, and he nudges nose and he kind of wake me up, and they just look at me funny, and I just look at him. I start laughing at the same time. I was like, what are you doing, man? Why are you waking me up like that? But I just realized after that few moments that I was like, I must have been having a nightmare that, you know, he just woke me up from. And then that's when I sat in his bed, and it was like I told everybody, it was just like an emotional moment. Just sat in his bed and started crying a little bit. And
I didn't train Tank to wake Ben up from a nightmare, but the connection they had and the other work that they'd had and forged together created that response for Tank to be there for Ben. So it's pretty special.
I keep in touch with all my guys on a regular basis. My wife can contest to that. They always check up on me. They always say, hey, Doc, you good? You good? And it's always nice to be called Doc still, even though I'm out and they're out. We've lost about 12 guys to suicide in the last year. It's tough. And having this guy around, he makes things a little bit better.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Meridian Broadus with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. Everyone has ups and downs. Feeling sad or having the blues from time to time is normal. However, if those feelings won't go away, they could be a sign that you have depression. May is Mental Health Month and is observed in the United States as a way to raise awareness, educate communities, and reduce stigma surrounding individuals who suffer from mental illness. Alfred Aguirre, Director for Behavioral Health Services at the County Health and Human Services Agency, says feeling sad and down are normal reactions to everyday struggles and disappointments. Depression is much more than just sadness. It's a feeling of emptiness and despair that could take hold of your life and won't go away. Depression makes it tough to function and enjoy life as you used to. So how can you tell if you're depressed? If you have several of the following signs and symptoms, especially the first two, and they don't seem to go away, you could be suffering from depression. Feeling hopeless and helpless? Your outlook on life is bleak. You feel as if things won't get better and that there's nothing you can do about it. Loss of interest in friends and things you used to do. Hanging out with your friends seems like a chore. Your hobbies and social activities now feel like a hassle. You've lost your ability to have fun. Tired all the time and have aches and pains. You feel physically drained. Even small tasks feel exhausting and endless. You experience physical ailments such as headaches, back pain, and aching muscles. Changes in sleep and appetite. You're either not sleeping or sleeping too much. You experience significant weight gain or loss. Your body weight changed by more than 5% in a month. Trouble concentrating and difficulty with easy tasks. You have trouble focusing, making decisions, or remembering things. Negative thoughts. You have strong feelings of worthlessness or guilt. You are very critical of yourself for perceived faults and mistakes. More irritable and aggressive. You feel agitated, restless, or even violent. Everything and everyone gets on your nerves. Drinking more alcohol and engaging in reckless behavior. You use substance abuse as an escape, are gambling compulsively, driving recklessly, or doing dangerous sports. Aguirre advises depression varies from person to person, but there are some common signs and symptoms. The more symptoms you have, the stronger they are and the longer they've lasted, the greater the chance that you have depression. If the symptoms are overwhelming and disabling, that's when it's time to seek help. People experiencing a mental health disorder can access services by calling the county's 24-hour multilingual access and crisis line at 888-724-7240. Resources are also available at It's Up to Us, the county's suicide prevention and mental health stigma reduction website.
The U.S. House of Representatives has voted in favor of a measure that would allow Veterans Administration doctors to recommend medical marijuana for their patients in states where medical marijuana is legal, currently 24 states, including California. The measure, an amendment to the Department of Veterans Affairs Appropriations Bill proposed by Representative Earl Blumenauer, an Oregon Democrat, passed by a 44-vote margin, including 57 Republicans voting in favor. Aaron Smith with the National Cannabis Industry Association called the action a policy that is long overdue, adding, "Medical marijuana has huge potential benefits for many of the issues that military veterans deal with, and it's unconscionable to muzzle their doctors from talking about it. We hope this vote for common sense and compassion is the first step this year towards a smarter, saner approach to cannabis policy from Congress." Nearly 150 cannabis professionals from across the country held nearly over 200 meetings with members of Congress and their staffs to lobby for the cannabis policy reform. Cannabis has been touted to treat a variety of ailments plaguing veterans, from pain due to combat injuries to PTSD. However, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs officially states that despite anecdotal stories of cannabis helping post-traumatic stress syndrome symptoms, controlled studies have not been conducted to evaluate the safety or effectiveness of medical marijuana for PTSD. Thus, the VA site states, there's no evidence at this time that marijuana is an effective treatment for PTSD. The VA also cautions that substance abuse issues involving marijuana use have increased in vets with PTSD. A CBS News national poll from last month shows that 56% of Americans support full legalization of marijuana, with an eye-popping 90% supporting legalization for medical use. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump spoke to a crowd of several thousand people at the San Diego Convention Center on Friday, while a crowd estimated by police at least 1,000 people, and maybe many more, protested outside. The protesters include representatives from labor, the Democratic Party, Mexican Americans, Muslims, women's rights advocates, and an array of progressive groups who urge that voters oppose Trump's divisive politics. Here's what it sounded like inside that Trump rally.
This is unbelievable! Unbelievable! Come here! Cameras, turn over here! Turn over here, cameras! You know, they never want to show the crowds we get. This is a movement, folks! And no other Republican would say this, but we are going to play for California. We're going to win California. You watch. You watch.
Trump sounded his familiar themes denouncing illegal immigration and calling for a wall at the border. He slammed trade deficits with Mexico, China, and other nations, and said he would eliminate Common Core in education, inexplicably claimed that California has no drought, and called media bloodsuckers. He also bashed Judge Gonzalo Curiel, an Obama appointee set to hear a civil fraud trial in San Diego after the election over the now defunct Trump University.
I will tell you, this court system, the judges in this court system, federal court, they ought to look into Judge Curiel, because what Judge Curiel is doing is a total disgrace. But we'll come back in November. Wouldn't that be wild if I'm president and I come back to do a civil case?
Later in the day, Judge Curiel ruled to open up key documents in the Trump University case, including training documents that show staff was told to look at how much money students made to determine which programs they should be sold. Trump ended his San Diego speech by saying, "I love you, San Diego. Now get out and vote." Former vice presidential nominee Sarah Palin, Congressman Duncan Hunter, and Daryl Issa also appeared in support of Trump at his rally here. Before the rally, prominent speakers denounced his candidacy outside the venue. County Democratic Party Chair Francine Busby stated, "San Diego has a very diverse population. We embrace our diversity," she said, adding, "We reject Donald Trump's divisive, hateful rhetoric." Former Assemblyman Nathan Fletcher called Trump unfit to be president and slammed his stances on veterans issues. Now here's an excerpt of his remarks.
You know, every election is a choice. And in every election, you have to make that choice. And normally, you're just making that choice between someone of one party and someone of another party. But the reality is with someone as divisive, as extreme as Donald Trump, in this election, you're deciding between someone that so many of us believe is unfit, is unstable, and is simply unqualified to be the president of the United States. And he's tapping in to an anger. And he's tapping in to underlying racism, and he's tapping into the very worst of America, and we have to stand for the very best of America. And we have to go out and we have to tell people that love does trump hate, but not if we sit on the sidelines, and not if we're quiet. We have to go out and talk, and we have to make sure people vote, and they have to make sure they understand. Today, Donald Trump is coming here to San Diego, and I've been told he's going to announce his Veterans Advisory Council. And I hope this is a group of people that can advise him on all of the things he's done wrong for veterans. Because at the end of the day, as a veteran, I can tell you there is no one who would be worse as our commander-in-chief. A few months ago, he didn't want to show up to a debate, so he used veterans as a pawn. And he said, "We're going to have a fundraiser," and he claimed he raised $6 million for veterans, except it wasn't true. It was a lie. And until it took being confronted with that lie. He doesn't support the GI Bill for veterans, a simple fact that those who fought and served should be able to get an education when they come back. He doesn't support. He said he wants to privatize the VA. He wants to make sure that those who gave the ultimate sacrifice, who gave so much, who have been through so much, are not afforded the health care that they need when they come back. He compared his own struggles in the 70s. He said his womanizing, his attempt to avoid getting the sexually transmitted disease, as his own Vietnam. Those were his words. A man who brags about his physical stamina, who had multiple deferments to avoid his service, and then said his own Vietnam was his efforts to not get a sexually transmitted disease. He took John McCain, who, regardless of what you think about his politics, served his country honorably in uniform, and he said he wasn't a war hero. Donald Trump took an American POW who we rescued after being held for 5 years, and he said that if he was president, he would give him back to the Taliban. He said we should shoot service members who suffer from mental health and injuries. And at the end of the day, Donald Trump cannot be protected, cannot be trusted to look out and protect the interests of our veterans. We can't afford someone who's going to cast veterans aside. We can't afford a man who's going to divide us in this country on the basis of gender, who's going to denigrate women. We can't afford someone who's going to divide us on the basis of race, who's going to cast us aside. We can't afford someone who's going to divide us on the basis of religion. In this election, we have a choice between those that would seek to divide us and those that would seek to unite us. And we have to come together in this election and say with one voice, we is not Donald Trump. There's another direction for our country, another way we can go. So thank you very, very much for everyone who's coming out today. We have a lot of work left to do. We look forward to winning in November. Thank you.
Trump is running on a slogan of Make America Great Again, but some protesters contend that his agenda would make America hate again. Protests outside the Trump rally were largely peaceful until after the rally dispersed, when witness accounts indicate Trump supporters in the gas lamp district began shoving and taunting people. Bottles were thrown and police declared an unlawful assembly, donning riot gear to clear the crowd, pushing them some 2 miles all the way back to Barrio Logan, according to Reporting San Diego. San Diego police report that 35 people were arrested. There were no injuries or property damages reported. Those arrests range from protesters who tried to breach a secured area to some Trump supporters to a controversial arrest of San Diego City Attorney candidate Brian Peace. Video shows Peace holding his campaign sign, backing away from a police line while videotaping the officers. The officers then knocked him to the ground. He was jailed overnight and charged with unlawful assembly. That action seems counter to Senate Bill 411, however, which was signed into law last year by Governor Brown. Called the Right to Record Act, it guarantees Californians have the right to record police in a public place in a reasonable, non-interfering manner. Peace told 10 News that he and 20 others were falsely arrested. Trump, meanwhile, has clinched enough votes last week to be the presumptive Republican nominee. The newest national polls show him running in a virtual dead heat against Hillary Clinton if she is chosen as the Democratic nominee. Clinton's lead in California has all but vanished, according to the latest polls, which show her running neck and neck against Bernie Sanders in California. While the Republican nomination has come down to a formality at their convention, the Democratic race remains contentious. Sanders is barnstorming the state and could win in California, though Clinton will likely still finish the race leading in overall vote count. But the Vermont senator clearly has momentum, and he has energized the party's progressive base. The Democratic convention will likely come down to superdelegates choosing the nominee. Concerns over the State Department's announcement this week that Clinton's use of a private email server violated federal policy, along with recent polls showing Sanders beating Trump by wide margins in the general election if he's the nominee, are bound to weigh heavily on the minds of superdelegates at the Democratic convention this summer as they determine whether Clinton's long experience as Secretary of State, First Lady, and Senator should trump Sanders' call for a political revolution, and they're no doubt also mindful of the army of enthused supporters that he could bring to the November election. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
2 weeks before the hotly contested California Democratic primary elections on June 7th, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has backed out of her earlier pledge to debate her opponent, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, in California. Senator Sanders issued a statement voicing disappointment by Clinton's refusal to debate in the state with the largest number of delegates in the nation. It reads, "The state of California and the United States face some enormous crises. Democracy and respect for the voters of California would suggest that there should be a vigorous debate in which the voters may determine whose ideas they support. I hope Secretary Clinton reconsiders her unfortunate decision to back away from her commitment to debate. I also would suggest that Secretary Clinton may want to be not quite so presumptuous about thinking that she is a certain winner. In the last several weeks, the people of Indiana, West Virginia, and Oregon have suggested otherwise. Though Clinton still leads by over 200 delegates and substantially more when pledged superdelegates are included, most of her primary and caucus wins were early in the season and predominantly in the South. States Democrats have lost to Republicans in recent elections. Sanders has shown momentum, winning 20 states, including most of the recent contests, some by landslides. She is also drawing huge crowds across California compared to Clinton or her husband, former President Bill Clinton. At a rally this week, Sanders said Clinton's refusal to debate is insulting to the people of California, our largest state, then suggested Clinton is not prepared to have a discussion with me about how we address the major crises we face. But with several recent polls showing her comfortably ahead in California, some by double-digit margins, Clinton has little incentive to take stage with Sanders in a debate. Sanders has been known to score come-from-behind victories in several states where he campaigned hard in the final days before the primary election, however, and some 2 million new voters have registered to vote in California, many of them young people, a core of Sanders' constituency. Besides California, voters on June 7th will also be casting ballots in Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
After Mrs. Clinton refused to debate Sanders in California, late-night comedy host Jimmy Kimmel asked Donald Trump if he would debate Senator Sanders, and Trump said he would, provided that $10 million could be raised for a charity. Sanders promptly tweeted, "Game on," agreeing to the debate in principle. A day later, Trump's campaign claimed that he was only joking. Now some high-tech industry representatives have come forward to say that they would donate $10 million that Trump demanded for a worthy charity, But Trump now says he doesn't want the debate a second-place finisher, although the Democratic primary is not yet over. That prompted fans of Sanders to hatch a new Twitter feed with the hashtag #ChickenTrump. Sanders fired back, saying he hopes Trump will change his mind as he has on many other issues, adding, "He's a big, tough guy. Well, Mr. Trump, what are you afraid of? Why do you not want to see a debate here in California and obviously all across this country?" Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm speaking with Kirk Kenny, author of a new book called 100 Things Padres Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. My guest is a veteran sports writer who's been writing for the San Diego Union-Tribune since 1985. Welcome, Kirk. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you very much for having me today.
Let's begin with your long career. How did you get started in sports writing?
Well, I was interested, I think, ever since I was a child almost. I had a paper out and enjoyed reading the paper every day, and it kind of got me interested in journalism. Then once I got into college, I worked for the school newspaper at San Diego State. Covered a variety of sports, but I think I gravitated most toward baseball. In fact, that was in 1981, and that team had five players on it that ended up making the major leagues, including one named Tony Gwynn.
Wow. Wow. And so did you ever want to be a baseball player, or were you just always wanted to write about it?
Oh, I think if I had the talent, I would have stayed with it myself, but it takes a pretty good person and player and athlete to achieve at the higher levels, college, and then onto the pros. So I think I chose the right route.
Right. Let's talk about the name of the team. Can you give us a hint of how the Padres came about?
Well, the team's history dates back to the minor leagues in the mid-1930s. It moved down from Los Angeles, and they were searching for a name. And I think with some of the city's history with the missions and such, Padres was a natural name, and it won a contest to have the team named the Padres. And that's where it started. And then when it became a major league team in 1969, they carried the name through.
And what were they called when they were in L.A.?
I believe it was the Los Angeles Stars. But
oh, the Padres is better. Your book, basically, it covers the team's most memorable behind-the-scenes stories over five decades of San Diego baseball history. I know that's a lot, and you're not going to give a spoiler, but what would you consider to be the most memorable memory?
I think the most memorable moment in Padres history is still probably the most memorable moment in San Diego sports history, and that's when Steve Garvey hit a famous home run against the Chicago Cubs that helped propel the Padres to the 1984 National League Championship and the World Series for the first time.
Can you give us any details of that event that make it really stand out?
Yeah, that was the first time the Padres had ever made the playoffs, and they went to Chicago and lost the first two games, so everybody thought, okay, they're pretty much done. But they came back, and they won the first game back in San Diego. It was the best 3 out of 5. And then in the fourth game, in the ninth inning, Garvey came to the plate with one runner on, and he stepped in and hit a home run to right field that just had the crowd go wild, pumped his fist as he went around first base, and was mobbed at the plate. So that tied the series, and the following day the Padres won, and they were on the way to the World Series. So, it's the delirium of having something happen for the first time.
Yeah, exciting, and don't give up.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you also, in the book, you write about some colorful personalities. Give us a couple of the most colorful personalities that have come across in your career.
Well, I think Tony Gwynn will always stand out the most. He spent 20 years with the team, and he's involved in so many different memorable moments, both of their playoff appearances and World Series appearances that happened in 1984, as I mentioned, in 1998. Mm-hmm. Also, he is the last person to come closest to batting .400. He batted .394 in 1994.
And what was colorful about him?
Just very quotable, always accessible. Mm-hmm. He had a laugh that people always mention. It's just one of the greatest laughs you've ever heard. So,
can you imitate it?
I can't even come close, so I'm not going to try.
Okay.
But someone else who I think was very colorful was their owner who saved the Padres from moving to Washington, D.C. in 1974, and that's Ray Kroc. He was the owner of McDonald's. And on the opening night at home, the Padres were having a poor game, and he got on the microphone, I believe in like the eighth inning, and he apologized to the fans for playing stupid baseball. And as he's doing this, a streaker ran across the field, and he yelled, "Arrest that man." All this happened on that opening night at home, and that endeared him to the fans, I think, forever.
Oh, wow, that's quite a story.
Yeah, and Ray Kroc was so beloved. I think just he had a passion for the game, mm-hmm. and it really came through to the fans, and they just loved him.
And what was the moment in your career so far that you thought, I love doing this. I love covering games. I love writing about this and witnessing this.
I don't know if there's any one moment. I think I was born and raised in San Diego, and I worked at the stadium for about 10 years in high school and college in the vending department. So I was mm-hmm. always around the game a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think just that love of the game, I got to carry that through in a career. And I think, you know, there's just not many more, I think, opportunities to be around the game and do something special like that.
How many people get that opportunity?
Not too many. And in this day and age with contraction in the industry, it's becoming more and more rare. So I feel very fortunate to be able to do it.
You mean the contraction of newspapers?
Newspapers and the industry itself. I think with the internet, we've had a lot of consolidation in various parts of the industry. There just aren't the same amount of opportunities, but certainly with newspapers more so than the others. When I started in this business, there were probably 18 or 20 newspapers in San Diego, and now basically there's one.
That's kind of sad.
Yes, I agree. I see a lot of kids coming out of journalism school now, and they don't have nearly the options that I did, so I don't think that that's a positive thing, and hopefully things will evolve and maybe some mm-hmm. other opportunities will present themselves. Mm-hmm.
Certainly the sports stay popular, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Yeah. In your book, you talk about some must-do activities that make up the Padre experience. Give us a hint of what some of those activities would be and why you think they're important.
One is trying to collect a set of the Washington Padres cards from 1974. They were so close to moving that Topps baseball cards went ahead and printed them, and it said Washington on the cards instead of San Diego.
Oh, really?
So those are very much a collector's item. Another thing I talk about is trying to get a foul ball at the game. That's always uh-huh. such a special souvenir. But I think the biggest thing would be trying to take a trip to Cooperstown. I was back there with my wife, and we were fortunate enough to be there when Tony Gwynn was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and it was a very special weekend. I think close to 85,000 people showed up to watch Tony
wow.
Gwynn and Baltimore's Cal Ripken Jr. go into the Hall of Fame. And there's several Padres artifacts in there that make it worthwhile for a Padres fan, but also just, you know, it's so much baseball history there. It's, mm-hmm. it's a must-do thing for a fan.
Now, do you have any Padres artifacts at home? Do you collect anything?
I have a few different things that I've collected through the years. One of the first I got that's still on my mantle was back in around 1970. I was in the Boy Scouts, and I had the Cub Scouts. And we had a meeting that one of the Padres attended, Mike Ivey, who was a catcher with the team at the time, and they had a raffle, and I ended up winning the autographed Padre baseball, and I still have that.
Awesome. Yeah. One last question. What's next for you? Are you going to write another book? Will it be about the same topic, or is there another sport that you want to focus on?
Right now I'm focused on they're having the All-Star game here in July, and so I've been mm-hmm. doing a lot of All-Star coverage for the newspaper. And there'll be several more stories coming out on that. I do have a few more book ideas. A couple are baseball related. I'd like to pursue if a hitter could ever hit 400 again in the major leagues and maybe tap into that. No one's done it since Ted Williams in 1941, and I think that's a topic that would be interesting to pursue.
Now, what do you hope is the future for the Padres?
Well, I'd like to see them get back to the playoffs. It's been nearly a decade since they were there, and I'm sure everyone would like to see them get back to the World Series and maybe win it this time.
So if you had to give a bit of advice to them, if they were asking you, what would you advise?
I don't know that they'd ask. I mean, they need to develop their farm system better and bring up some talented players through that, and then they just need to make a couple good moves on top of that that will help get them back to where they were. It's a recipe for success that I think they followed in both 84 and 98, and I think it would work again.
Well, maybe they should ask you for advice.
Well, I think they have my number, but I won't exactly be waiting by the phone.
Okay, our time is up, Kirk, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
For more information on Kirk Kenny and his book, please visit his Facebook page at facebook.com/Kirk, K-I-R-K, dot Kenny, K-E-N-N-E-Y, dot 5, the number 5. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza-Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, May 20th, 2016. I'm Mark Richardson. In today's News Digest, the search continues for Egypt Air Flight 804, which some officials believe was taken down by terrorists. When you jump in the swimming pool this summer, make sure you know what you're getting into. And health officials say it's not whether the Zika virus will come to our shores, just a matter of when. Another airline mystery tops our news as officials continue to search for an Egypt Air jetliner with 66 people aboard, which veered wildly in flight and crashed into the Mediterranean Sea. Officials say it may have been brought down by terrorists. There were no signs of survivors. Egypt Air Flight 804 was en route from Paris when it went down about halfway between the Greek island of Crete and Egypt's coastline. Radar indicates that the plane spun all the way around and suddenly lost altitude before it vanished. Meanwhile, officials in California are planning to dramatically roll back strict mandatory water conservation rules imposed at the height of the state's multi-year drought. They say a wet winter eased conditions in part of the state. California's Water Resources Board voted to end mandatory conservation of up to 36% in many communities, moving instead to a system under which only regions where a shortage is anticipated will need to conserve. Lawmakers in Oklahoma approved a bill Thursday that would make performing abortions a felony and revoke the medical licenses of most physicians who assist in such procedures. The sweeping measure, which opponents describe as unconstitutional, now heads to Republican Governor Mary Fallon. She'll have 5 days to decide whether to sign the bill, veto it, or allow it to become law without her signature. It will be summer soon, and just when you thought it was safe to go back in the pool, health officials warn that it could be full of nasty parasites.
Healthy and Safe Swimming Week begins on Monday, and in a new report, the CDC says nationwide testing shows most public swimming areas had at least one violation, and one in eight had to be closed immediately. Dr. Michael Beach, the agency's associate director for Healthy Water, says it doesn't mean never go to a public pool or water park, but it does mean you should be proactive by checking to see if the water's okay. He says one simple way to do that is by buying test strips.
You're essentially taking a strip and dipping it in the water and reading a color. Make sure the drain at the bottom of the deep end of the pool is visible. This means the water is clear enough for lifeguards and others to see swimmers underwater who may need help. If you can't see the main drain, the pool shouldn't be open.
The CDC looked at data on tests done on 85,000 public swimming areas with water that had been treated. Beach says human feces accounts for about 3/4 of all outbreaks of illness from public pools. I'm Veronica Carter reporting.
Funding cuts to higher education have driven up tuition, making college less affordable and less accessible to many students. That, according to a new national report, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities says with inflation factored in, states on average are spending 17% less on higher education than they did when the recession hit in 2008. The state of Kentucky is spending about 32% less. The report's author, Michael Mitchell, says almost every state is now trying to reinvest in college, while a few states, including Kentucky, are going backwards.
Unfortunately, for students, when it comes to tuition, when it comes to quality of schools, it puts in question whether or not those things will be there, affordability and quality, moving forward.
The report shows that 37 states increased college funding over the last year, but Kentucky is one of only three states to make cuts. Mitchell says when states cut funding, student debt goes up, meaning many graduates are forced to postpone life events such as buying a house or a car or starting a business. In Colorado, sewage is starting to smell more like energy, and some say it could be a way to slow climate change.
Raw sewage rarely draws a crowd, but former Colorado Governor Bill Ritter joined city leaders from across the state in Denver yesterday to learn more about turning human waste into natural gas. David Cox with the Renewable Natural Gas Coalition says turning waste into fuel can actually lower greenhouse gas emissions that would otherwise be released on farms, landfills, and water treatment facilities.
Renewable natural gas provides an opportunity to convert everyday waste into transportation fuel or renewable electricity. This can be part of Colorado's solution to smog and air pollution to combat climate change.
Cox explains the same energy extracted by drilling deep into the earth can be harvested from landfills and sewage because regardless of where organic matter decomposes, methane, the primary component of natural gas, is released. And he says since methane is more than 80 times more powerful at trapping heat than carbon dioxide, redirecting emissions into a pipeline could help reduce climate pollution. I'm Eric Galatis.
Public health officials in Texas are warning that the Zika virus is almost certainly on its way there this summer, and it could have a devastating effect on impoverished communities in coastal and border cities. Experts told state lawmakers this week that Zika cases contracted through mosquito bites would likely start showing up as early as June. Peter Hotez, dean of Baylor College of Medicine's School of Tropical Medicine, says if a pregnant woman contracts the virus, it can block the development of her baby's brain.
This is what I've been calling the virus from hell. It's really every parent's nightmare. It crosses over into their placentas and ultimately halts the development of their baby's brain. I can't think of a more nightmarish scenario.
Officials with the state health department say there have already been 35 confirmed cases of Zika in Texas, but almost all of them were contracted by people who traveled to infected areas of Central and South America. They say the disease will spread much faster once it's transmitted by the mosquito population. They're urging state officials to begin a mosquito eradication program sooner rather than later. And that's the news. I'm Mark Richardson for Public News Service. Member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.